We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked.
And complete the dang fence.
This bill that we will sign today is not a revolutionary bill.
Cast down your bucket where you are.
We come from France.
And I am, adamantly against illegal immigrants.
They're coming in by the thousands. Just unbelievable.
A wall is an immorality.
Who are you rooting for?
Those masters of the universe are at it again.
You maniac! You blew it up!
Hello, and welcome to Parsing Immigration Policy, the weekly podcast of the Center for Immigration Studies. I'm Jessica Vaughn, Director of Policy Studies at the Center, and I'm subbing for Mark Krikorian this week. It's the time of year when a lot of state legislatures are wrapping up their sessions or have already wrapped up, so it's a good time to take a look at some of the immigration bills that have passed and become law this year. I'm going to be joined today by D.A. King with the Dustin Inman Society from Georgia, and also by Joanne Bregman, who's a lawyer and who works with the Eagle Forum in Tennessee. And we're going to focus in particular on those new laws at the state level that are designed to help deter illegal immigration and enhance enforcement of immigration laws. There are basically three kinds of bills that have made it through the state houses and become law this year. There are some different states that have passed laws making illegal immigration or illegal presence a state crime, allowing local officers to make arrests of illegal aliens. There have been some new laws against local sanctuary policies that are intended to mandate cooperation with ICE by local authorities. And there have also been some laws dealing with allowing public benefits of occupational and professional licenses for illegal aliens. So those are all the topics we're going to cover. And I want to start with first a particular type of bill, the bills that create new state crimes of illegal presence. And the bill that inspired some states to act on this was passed last year, at the end of last year, in Texas, known as SB4. And that got a lot of attention. It was supposed to go into effect in March, but has been blocked by the courts and is pending review. Now, that law in Texas makes it a state crime to cross illegally into Texas from Mexico, makes it a misdemeanor for the first offense and possibly a felony for any subsequent offenses. And after serving punishment, judges in Texas can order an illegal alien who's been prosecuted under this law to be transported to a port of entry, or the judge can even drop charges if the alien agrees to return to their home country voluntarily. So this sparked a lot of interest in other states, despite the fact that it's been blocked by the federal courts from going into effect. But a couple of other states passed similar laws. Iowa and Oklahoma passed their own version of this law. Iowa's was passed and signed by Governor Kim Reynolds on April 10th. And in Iowa, it's a slightly different approach since, for one thing, they are not a border state. But what the new Iowa law does is create a state crime of criminal reentry. So anyone who has been previously deported or denied admission into the United States could potentially be charged with an aggravated misdemeanor or a felony. And it requires the state judges, in such cases, to issue an order to return home. And state officers are responsible for transporting people who are convicted of this crime to the port of entry. So essentially, what these bills are doing is trying to set up a way for state authorities to make immigration arrests and to actually effect what amounts to a removal from these states to the port of entry. And this is happening because these states are frustrated with the scale of illegal migration and the fact that under the Biden policies, immigration enforcement has been so drastically reduced. Now, the Department of Justice has announced that it's going to sue Iowa as it's suing Texas at the moment. to try to block these laws from going into effect. Then on April 30th of this year, Oklahoma Governor Kevin Still signed a new bill that's similar, creating a crime of what they call impermissible occupation in the state of Oklahoma, and saying that their focus is going to be on those illegal aliens involved in a crime, and particularly drug crimes. And again, what this reflects is frustration in the states about the increase in crimes associated with illegal immigration and the proliferation of transnational criminal organizations committing crimes, as we've covered frequently on this podcast. So it's going to be interesting to see how these three state laws fare in the courts and whether other states are going to follow suit. Now I want to bring in one of my guests who've been working on bills in their states so that they can explain these bills and what motivated lawmakers to pass them and get them signed into law. In some cases, these were upgrades to laws that were passed years ago that weren't working and designed to meet the new challenge of illegal immigration that we're experiencing at this time. First, I'm going to bring in my guest from Georgia, D.A. King, who's with the Dustin Inman Society. D.A. has worked on the immigration issue for many years, and he leads one of the most effective state grassroots groups on the immigration scene. And that group is called the Dustin Inman Society. Good to talk with you, D.A., and thanks for joining us.
Always my pleasure, Jessica. Thank you very much.
All right. So this was a busy session for you in Georgia this year. One important result was the passage of HB 1105, the Georgia Criminal Alien Track and Report Act of 2024. Tell us about this bill. Well, it's now a law, I guess.
It is now a law, and the legislation began long before the horrible murder of the college co-ed on the University of Georgia campus.
Mm-hmm. Lake and Riley.
And I also need to make sure your listeners understand that we have had here in Georgia laws in place that outlaw sanctuary city policies and require jailers to check immigration status of foreign-born prisoners and report illegal aliens to the feds since 2006. So if people read that Georgia passed a new law requiring those two functions, it's an inaccurate news report.
And I guess we shouldn't be surprised that this kind of issue is covered inaccurately in the press. It wouldn't be the first time. But tell us what the bill does and why it was needed.
I will. The bill, now signed into law by Governor Kemp, put penalties, stronger penalties, in place in a 2006 statute that requires jailers to check immigration status of foreign-born prisoners and report illegal aliens to the federal government. Having been in place since 2006, for the last 6 years, I have been trying to make people understand in government that the law is completely ignored and that many jailers were boasting in public that they were not going to comply with that law. Mm. The bill, now law 1105, also puts in place punishments for operating a sanctuary city. Both of those punishments are misdemeanors on the first offense for the jailers and the law enforcement officials, and a misdemeanor of high and aggravated offense for second violations. The law also requires that local law enforcement agencies make an annual application to ICE to obtain 287G authority. And it may sound like a lot to people, but we wanted to be sure that the message goes across. Unless a local law enforcement agency has 287G authority, under the law as it is now, they are required to apply each and every year. There are penalties put in place for county governments. There are penalties put in place for the jailers. There's a provision that makes it easier for people to come behind and check compliance in that, for example, the local jailers are required to fill out a series of reports that would enable any intelligent observer to discern whether or not they were in compliance with the laws that I'm discussing with you now.
I think that part of it is important, the disclosure requirement, so that the public can see what the public safety impact of illegal immigration is in the state or in a particular locality, just to understand the scale of the issue.
Certainly. And to that end, we put in a requirement, the Department of Corrections, who runs our prison system here in Georgia, that they put out a quarterly public report on aggregate data of the numbers of illegal aliens with ICE detainers in the prison system. Also, a different number telling us how many foreign-born prisoners there are in the same prison system, allowing us to subtract the detainer number from the total number and see how the wind blows on that.
Right, and that would allow the public to see to what extent ICE is actually keeping up with the workload, so to speak. How many criminal aliens they're giving a pass to, in effect.
It does that, but what it also does here on a state and local level is we know that the prison system is telling us that each prisoner costs $73 a day. We also know from checking that right now we have a little over 1,500 illegal aliens with ICE detainers in the system. If you multiply 1,500 times $73 a day, you get a very, very hard number of around $40 million on an annual cost of what it's costing to put just ICE detained people, continue them in our prison system. And I can tell you that most state governments do not want their voters to understand the actual hard number official cost of any part of illegal immigration.
Yeah, I think that's right. So this is going to shine some light on the effects on the community and also require that law enforcement agencies, you know, be cooperating with the feds and identifying criminal aliens within the population of people who are in custody. And can you tell us what some of the locations are within Georgia that might be having to change their behavior because of this law?
I can do that. I would shine some light on the sheriff in Gwinnett County, Georgia, here in metropolitan Atlanta, where I live. That sheriff's name is Kebo Taylor. On the day he was inaugurated into his office in 2021, he made it clear about his attitude towards compliance with then existing law. And he was a very big driver on getting our bill passed. What Sheriff Taylor said in his first day in office is what we will not be doing is notifying ICE of anybody's immigration status in the jail or any of our facilities. That was January the 1st, 2021. In one sentence, he managed to convince the public, the legislators, and the media that he would not comply with either of the two sanctuary laws that we had in place at the time, which, again, was a great impetus in us sharpening those laws and putting in very serious criminal penalties.
Mm-hmm. Right, because the original law didn't have a way to force compliance or, you know, even incentivize it. So that's why this year's law was needed. Is that fair understanding?
It is. It was difficult. I did a 2 years worth of series of open records requests trying to find out if these jailers were checking all the information they were bound to by the existing law. And it was difficult to get a firm answer because I was continually told that some of the information was law enforcement, private, or sensitive. So by putting the requirement for compliance reports into the law, a sheriff will be in violation even if he doesn't file a report, much less do what the report is designed to illustrate.
Mm-hmm. And Texas enacted one of the first anti-sanctuary laws that actually did include such consequences for leaders of law enforcement agencies that choose not to comply. And theirs, as far as I understand, has worked pretty well.
Well, I'm confident that we are going to see a lot of difference in compliance here in Georgia, assuming that the executive branch does its job.
Good. So effective grassroots work is not just pushing for good legislation like that bill, but also alerting people to bad legislation. Tell us about some of the other bills that you were dealing with in this most recent session.
I will, Jeffrey. It's difficult to accept as accurate, but it really is. There was a Senate Bill 112 that created a second tier of adult education, and I quote from the bill, anyone in Georgia who does not have a high school education. So what the bill did, it provided tax money to the technical college system so that anybody without a high school education could attend taxpayer-funded classes to get the high school diploma. What it didn't have was an exception for people in the country illegally. So we would have been paying taxpayer dollars to provide high school education to adults over age 21 who were illegal aliens. We got that cleaned up in the House. There was another bill that did pass and was signed last week by Governor Kemp. It is a matter of great concern. We have a system here in Georgia put in place again in 2006 that classifies occupational and professional licenses as public benefits, and an expanded system that says you have to swear on an affidavit under felony penalty of false swearing that effectively you're not an illegal alien. You have to demonstrate and prove that you are eligible for the benefit. So there was a law, there was a bill that is now a law that has taken away the requirement for an occupational license for a series of low-skilled jobs in the barbering and cosmetology industry. Well, once you take away, as I vehemently pointed out to legislators and the governor, once you take away the occupational licensing system, you have also removed the verification of lawful presence check built into that system. So now we have actually watched the legislature pass the enforcement bill we talked about a moment ago, but also put in place a law that begins to dismantle the system of checking immigration status for public benefits, including occupational licenses.
That's not the right direction.
It's not the right direction, and the business community has been very successful in obtaining what they wanted out of that latter bill.
Interesting. This general area of, you know, trying to gradually expand opportunities for various classes of illegal aliens, particularly the ones who have been issued work permits, you know, historically high numbers under the Biden administration, is happening in other states around the country as well. And it often takes the form of these rules around occupational and professional licenses that can be an opportunity for people, even without work permits, to support themselves here, and that can be an incentive for staying here illegally. And it's not, you know, a lot of the discussion is focused on E-Verify, but these kinds of measures are just as important for states to be watching out for.
They certainly are. A quick word, people should pay attention to what I call a new hustle, and that hustle is illegal aliens without work permits forming an LLC, a limited liability company, and using that to get paid for various jobs and then paying themselves from their own LLC. From what I'm reading, there is nothing in any state that prevents an illegal alien from forming his own LLC and going to town on what I just described.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And there's nothing in federal law that I'm aware of that would prevent that either. And that avoids the whole issue of verification through E-Verify and more. And, you know, and this is something that we need to be alert to because of the scale of illegal immigration in recent years as well.
It does. And I make a very confident prediction for the beginning of the next legislative session here in Georgia that there will be a bill that prevents illegal aliens from forming an LLC.
All right. In my experience, state legislators are often more likely to take up reforms if they know that another state has tried something and it's survived legal challenges and proven to be effective and so on. So it's I think, important for people all over the country to hear about successful initiatives and successes in the legislature on the side of immigration restriction. Do you have any advice for others working in the grassroots in other states?
I do. It's constant. I've been doing this 20 years here. This finished my 19th session. People should understand that enforcement works. I'm sitting here reading before you called news reports about illegal aliens now writing the taxi industry is taking a huge economic benefit from this because a lot of illegal aliens have given up driving with the fear that they'll be caught. Absent the federal function of a secure border and enforcement of our immigration laws, people around the country and state and local outfits should understand that we have to make it very, very difficult, if not impossible, for an illegal alien to obtain a job, a benefit, or a service. If you do that, they will leave. We've proven that multiple times.
Well, that's right. And we've seen that throughout these decades, shown it through research, our research and the research of others. And the reason people are coming is because they can and because they believe that they'll be able to work here. That's why they're coming illegally. And if they can't succeed in that, then those who can't support themselves are going to go home and others will be deterred from coming illegally at all. So this is really the key to enforcement generally, much more than necessarily detention beds or prosecutions and so on. This is what this is all about. And it's important at the state level, especially when the federal government is not doing its job because of the priorities of any particular administration.
Well, I can tell your listeners, assure your listeners, illegal aliens are leaving Georgia just since last week. Illegal aliens are being extremely careful and looking around for places to go. Illegal aliens are leaving Florida since the E-Verify law went into effect last year. Enforcement works, is my ever-present saying.
It's most definitely true. And states are not helpless in the face of federal inaction, that they have authorities and that they can be used on this problem. Well, thank you so much, DA, and good work in Georgia. And I, again, appreciate your taking the time to come on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Jessica. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, DA. My next guest is Joanne Bregman. Joanne is an attorney in Tennessee who for many years has worked on immigration policy issues with the Tennessee Eagle Forum. Joanne, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the bill on immigration enforcement cooperation, which was the first one passed in April. Tennessee already had a law prohibiting sanctuaries on the books, but this law that was passed this year says now that law enforcement agencies shall communicate with ICE on illegal aliens that they discover in their facilities or in the course of their official duties. Can you explain to us the context in which this was passed and why this law is going to be helpful?
Sure. So in 2018, we did a overhaul of our sanctuary city law. We had passed one in 2009, but it was very early. Those were early bills that I think sanctuary cities are really, those kinds of laws were just starting to emerge. So in 2018, we revamped our sanctuary law. We put in a very broad, encompassing definition of what constitutes a sanctuary policy. It didn't even have to be written. It could be an informally adopted or a practice that would constitute a sanctuary policy. So I think that this law that was passed this year to further enhance our sanctuary law aligns with this broadened policy in terms of how law enforcement is required to now interface with DHS in order to effectuate the whole objectives of the sanctuary policy. And I would say, what one of the lessons from Tennessee is that it's really worth going back and looking at laws that have been passed like sanctuary policies, because changes in the law, court decisions sometimes can help you even strengthen the laws that you've passed before.
Right. And even the practical steps of putting these laws into place and seeing how they play out gives you the chance to evaluate how well they're working and So it's really healthy to keep going back to look at these laws and if they're accomplishing their purpose, and if not, how can you tweak them or upgrade them? I think that's a good lesson.
And I think, too, in the environment that we're operating in, we see, in fact, I was reading it on the CIS website today, the disclosure of airports that are receiving individuals from the border. So there's all good reason why we should be looking at these kinds of laws to see how they're playing out or perhaps not being effective in our current environment.
Not to mention the fact that illegal immigration is so much higher now on such a greater scale that a lot of places that didn't think they had much of a problem with it are reevaluating that nowadays, with more than 3 million illegal migrants being released into the United States, you know, just in the last 3 years. So the scale of this is much more.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that that absolutely played into the other law that we passed this session.
Well, let's talk about that. The second bill is one that is more unique. It was signed into law in early May. And this one addresses a provision in Tennessee law, which a number of other states have also, that allows illegal aliens, those without status, who've been issued temporary work permits to obtain a professional license to work in Tennessee. So please explain to us what this new bill does and how it addresses that.
Sure. So it's both professional and commercial licenses. And in 2022, our state legislature, which is a Republican supermajority in the House and in the Senate, and we have a Republican governor, well, they passed a law that said that professional and commercial licenses were no longer considered a public benefit, and that anyone with temporary work authorization would now be eligible to apply for these licenses. I mean, obviously, people would have to have the qualifications for, say, a plumber's license. They'd have to know how to be a plumber and pass whatever certification, but that in terms of getting the license, it was no longer going to be a public benefit, a state-issued public benefit, and it would instead, as long as you had work authorization, you could be eligible to apply for it. Now, prior to 2022, when this law was passed, anyone applying for these type of state-issued licenses had to either be a U.S. citizen or a qualified alien as defined in federal law. So a qualified alien is like an asylee, a refugee, certain other categories of aliens. But in 2022, legislators here were told by the small business lobby, FIB, that this bill in 2022 would only apply to DACA and temporary protected status, except that just simply was not true because the actual language of the bill applied to anyone with temporary work authorization. And that, as you know, includes many other groups of aliens, including
yes,
the other otherwise inadmissible aliens being paroled in by the Biden administration.
Right. And this is a really important point because this is a common tactic that people who want to launder the status of people who are here without status try to take to say, oh, well, this only applies to DACA or only to this select group. When in fact, if you read the fine print, it applies to many more people. And also, again, now at this point in time, there has been such a historically high number of temporary work permits issued to people who are illegal aliens, illegal border crossers, otherwise inadmissible, who are getting this temporary work permit, it changes the equation.
Oh, absolutely. But we should add, I think we have to give a hats off to Florida, because Florida, last year, they were the first one. They actually repealed a 2014 law that had permitted DACA and certain TPS recipients to get a license to practice law in the state. And Attorney General Moody from Florida repealed that law. So now Tennessee is following the example, and we've removed this open door eligibility for obtaining professional and commercial licenses. We've restored the law to what was in place prior to 2022, So now in Tennessee, applicants for state-issued licenses, professional and commercial licenses, have to either be a U.S. citizen or a qualified alien as defined in federal law. We added one other clarifier to the law, and that is that lawfully present in our eligibility verification for benefits law, that lawfully present language is now directly referenced to the Immigration and Nationality Act. And we've said it is as it's defined in the Immigration and Nationality Act, because there's always a lot of confusion around this term lawfully present. And too many of the legislators, I think, fail to understand that having temporary work authorization does not provide anyone with a lawful immigration status, nor does Congress even recognize that having work authorization makes someone lawfully present.
Right. And there's another point that a lot of people don't realize is that if you are here illegally, even if, you know, without a work permit, if you can find work as an independent contractor, you're not going to be subject to other controls that exist, like E-Verify or the I-9 form, for an employer to verify your status. You could support yourself by working as an independent contractor. But the catch is that in most places, for a lot of professions, you'd have to get a professional license. So having this requirement also, you know, blocks off that avenue of de facto employment for people in the country illegally.
Yes. And I would say here in Tennessee, my impression as to two main reasons that drove the passage of the bill this year. One, it was finally determined, and I think legislators started to understand with some explanation, that the way they wrote the bill in 2022 was actually preempted by the federal law, because the federal law that applies on public benefits specifically defines commercial and professional licenses as a state public benefit and leaves no authority for states to redefine what is or is not a state public benefit. So our law, as written, said that commercial and professional licenses was no longer a public benefit. Well, that was preempted by federal law. And secondly, it was determined that the 2022 law really served to endorse certain actions by both the Obama administration and the Biden administration that violated immigration laws that are actually intended to disincentivize and discourage illegal immigration. With regard to the Obama administration, we were talking about DACA. And as you know, 3 years ago, the Texas federal court, which was affirmed by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, held that the DACA program is substantively and procedurally invalid and in violation of federal immigration law. And currently, in the case of the Biden administration, it's really the gross abuse of the various parole programs that are actually being challenged by multiple multi-state lawsuits, including those our attorney general has signed on to that. So really, having the state law in place was inconsistent with the position our attorney general was taking, challenging the abuse of immigration parole. And I think as it unrolled and legislators started to see that, I think they started to understand that the two couldn't coexist.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, state legislators from where I sit are going to continue to be confronted with this issue of state public benefits and, like, in-state tuition. It's another state public benefit that is defined in the federal law. And many, many states have confronted the advocacy on behalf of DACA to give in-state tuition. So I think this is just the start of what we're going to see in terms of this push to give state public benefits like these commercial and professional licenses and in-state tuition to various groups of aliens that aren't even here lawfully.
Right. The same is true of some of the school choice scholarship programs and other areas. So which other states may have a provision like Tennessee had that attempts to allow these licenses to go to these groups?
Sure. So Arkansas, Indiana, Mississippi, West Virginia, Nebraska, and that's just to name a few. Well, these states also use work authorization as the basis for access to professional and commercial licenses. South Carolina, I know, had a bill last year that failed to pass. Illinois, mm-hmm. well, in Illinois, DACA recipients can get a law license to practice law. In Utah, they can also get a license to practice law, but that actually was not done by state legislation. That was done through a change in rule made by their state Supreme Court. That's the other avenue. Mm-hmm. And state legislatures, you know, may ultimately be pressed to look at that, because I think certainly as it pertains to practicing law, there is an inherent conflict with someone who does not have a lawful immigration status, is potentially removable from the U.S., but then would take an oath to uphold the laws, as a, you know, which is the oath that you take to get a law license. So there's an inherent inconsistency in terms of your immigration status and whether you should be permitted to practice law. Wyoming, unfortunately, I recently discovered in 2015, they actually repealed their law that required U.S. citizenship in order to have a license to practice law. So maybe Wyoming wants to go back and relook at their laws on that.
Interesting.
I'd like to add one other point, that for people in other states, especially now with these lawsuits that attorney generals are signing onto, these multi-state lawsuits challenging the Biden administration's abuse of parole, immigration parole, this would be a good time to see if your attorney general has signed onto those lawsuits and your state is providing, say, commercial and professional licenses based on work authorization, it would be a great time to talk to your attorney general and maybe follow the example set by Florida and Tennessee and repeal those laws.
Indeed. Thank you so much for explaining this and for giving us some optimism about what can be accomplished at the state level.
Thanks for having me, and many thanks for the work of CIS. We appreciate it.
Again, thanks to my guests, and we'll continue to follow these developments in the state houses. That's it for this week's Parsing Immigration Policy. Look for more information in the show notes. I'm Jessica Vaughn, and thanks for tuning in. Give us a like or a review if you're so inclined, and please come back and listen again.